America. Oh, that's a little ambitious. Hello, promoters, and welcome to Uncharted Territory, episode number 86. Delighted to be here this evening. I am your host for the evening, Stu Lowry. It is a delight to be here. We're going to be reviewing a very popular set in Champions of the Galaxy lore as our main event, plus doing our usual hijinks and tomfoolery. Before we get started, it is as our tradition to go around and talk with each member of the panel, have them properly greet us and give their weather. I will save my weather for last, as a matter of fact, just as a tease. Tim Dalton, how is the weather in Buffalo, New York, sir?
It's freaking hot.
Yeah.
I have Stu Lowry weather. I just did my park golf league tonight, and I believe it is the hottest I have ever played park golf in. It was, I believe, 91 when I pulled in the lot, and humid. So I was a lovely, fragrant mess by the end of that round. So it was an interesting evening there, and I didn't shoot poorly, but I didn't shoot well either. But it's freaking hot. It's supposed to be hot again tomorrow. And humid, and then we have a cooling trend coming in, and supposedly a nice weekend coming up, so that'll be nice.
Excellent. Tim, are you wearing your Uncharted Territory t-shirts when you're on the golf course?
I often do, Stu.
Very nice.
I often do.
Very nice. I'm sure they are conversation starters, if not enders.
I vote enders. I vote never was. Like, what the fuck is that? And they keep on walking.
Let's not talk to this guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're like shooing all their kids away from me. No, right. Don't go talk to that man.
Right. He's on our registry.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
We got notified when he moved into the neighborhood.
Oh, very well. Very well. Chad, how is the weather in your neck of the woods?
Well, we've had a wild ride over the past 24 hours here in the central Iowa. So yesterday it was, we had a heat advisory the past 2 days, Monday and Tuesday, with the heat index. It was highs of 105 during the day. My son's Little League game started at 6 o'clock last night, where it was a nice, cool, breezy 95 degrees. Thankfully there was a good breeze and everything. So it wasn't too bad, but then last night about 9 o'clock started getting severe thunderstorm watch notifications on the phone. I'm like, okay, well, whatever. I went to bed, and then the rains came. And when I woke up this morning, I got up to take my walk and it was still thundering. So I'm like, oh, I'm not going to go outside. And I looked, and overnight they had posted a severe flash flood warning. And I looked outside, and lo and behold, the street across from me, the yards were underwater. I live kind of on an intersection. So the east-west road that runs into the north-south I live on, the east-west road was underwater, and both neighbors on the sides, their lawns were underwater. And then as I drove to work this morning, there was a lot of fields underwater. Some of the walking paths in town were underwater. We got 5 inches of rain last night, including an inch and a half in about a half an hour, which I think started the flooding escapades. So the weather was really nice today. It was like 75 degrees. But looking at tomorrow, when Carter has another baseball game and when he'll be able to get back on the field from his injury, it's going to be 90. So it'll be a little toasty, but it'll hopefully dry things out. Because right now the main road that I take to Ames has standing water on both sides all the way up to the road. It's flooded out of the fields, flooded up the ditches, and is literally right on the sides of the roads. Of course, nothing to the extent of Yellowstone. I saw some video from that today. I had a friend who was actually taking a family vacation out there, and then she put on the Facebook yesterday that they had to detour and decided just to do the South Dakota Rapid City Mount Rushmore stuff because of the severe flooding in Yellowstone.
Well, Chad, I know I speak for my colleagues here when we say we're glad you're safe, and we hope that your neighbors are safe as well.
Yes, everybody's good.
And Chad, I just want to let you know, I was going to save this for later on in the podcast, but I figured this is just opportune.
Okay.
You know, anybody out there, if they are having problems with flooding, I just want to let them know your Uncharted Territory t-shirts can be used as a flotation device.
And they're
all
actually,
you need to do is wrap them around something that will float. So how you get them is you go to tekostore.com. That's tekostore.com. And this way you will be all set. You get that. You get a couple lifesavers, not the candy kind, the kind that are on boats, right, but you get those, right. you put the t-shirt on it. You're all set. You're ready to go. You're flooding has nothing on you. You're ready to rock and roll.
And actually the envelope has bubble wrap, which I think can also be used as a flotation device.
Your whole family can be saved by buying a t-shirt. I'm just throwing that out there for people that may be affected.
Also, they're moisture wicking, so you can use them as a chamois in case your house floods. I'm fairly positive on that. I'm not quite the scientist, but
OSHA compliant.
Know. Oh fuck yeah! Anything you need. Anything you need. Yes. Beach towel.
ISO whatever 1,000 you want. I mean, yep. It's they're good.
7,000.
Yeah. one trillion.
There you go. So I got that out of the way early this year.
Yeah. If you're like stranded on your house due to flooding, you can use it as a flag to flag people down and say, "Hey, come help me with a helicopter."
The red color.
Yeah. There you go.
International sign of color of distress.
Right. Yeah. You wave a shirt with our faces on it, and people will know there is distress.
They will know that you need help. That's for sure.
They will wonder what the hell you're doing with your life. But Tim, that was an excellent PSA. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Tim. That's good.
Thank you. Very good. Corey Olson, how is life in Minnesota? Certainly hope is not as dramatic as that.
Not quite as dramatic. We've had about a 30 degree swing in the last 2 days, hit up to about 97 yesterday. It was friggin' hot and humid and ugly. And then today we got rain, not as much as Iowa, but we did get some rain, which cooled it off. I think the high today was about 70, and looks like we'll be kind of in the 70s, maybe low 80s the next couple of days, but supposed to get back up, maybe even hit the triple digits by next week. So we'll see what happens. But you know, I'm fine with it. I can stay inside if I need to, if it's too hot, and play Champions of the Galaxy and Legends of Wrestling. It's happy that it's not snow, and happy to be here with you promoters.
Very well, Corey. Glad to hear that. We in Virginia had it's about 92 degrees today. The heat index was 1,000,007, I believe. That's the official reading, and it was so disgustingly humid. You walk outside, you were sweating within 5 seconds. So welcome to Virginia in summer. So glad it's here. We will have this weekend looks actually spectacular. So it's going to be highs in the upper 70s, low 80s, very similar to what Mr. Dalton is having up north. Delighted to be here with all of you promoters here tonight. Once again, we have a great show, if we do say so ourselves, and we usually do. We do have a great show in store for you tonight. But before we get into our main event, we got a lot that's going on that's been announced in terms of official Filsinger Games cards and the various product lines, not the least of which is first and foremost up for the released in the Legends line for the upcoming Trego Synthes Hall of Fame set number 3 is Mike Rotunda. This is a great addition to the game, certainly not going to be a huge surprise, or isn't a huge surprise to most promoters, as the cat was let out of that bag fairly early. But a very important character to have, very versatile character to have in terms of the roles that he can fill in your Fed. And just in general reactions to this gentleman, Corey, we'll go to you first. What are your thoughts on having Rotunda in the game?
This is a great signing. And I actually witnessed the signing take place last summer when Mike went up to Mike Rotunda at the Waterloo Hall of Fame. He was a guest on Friday night during the IPW card. He and Barry Windham were together as the US Express signing autographs. And Mike did a great job of you know, kind of plugging the game. He brought Barry Windham copies of his Color Legends cards, as well as some of Black Jack Mulligan, and then kind of explained the game to Rotunda. And Windham himself kind of put in a plug and just said, "Hey, it's a card and dice game, you know, just do it." So it was really cool to see Windham's support there and get Rotunda on board. And I know right away I witnessed this too. Rotunda said he can't be IRS. And you know, for the Trego Synthes Hall of Fame, with him being inducted this year, this the varsity club era is I think the most fitting. Not to say that other cards won't be released of him at some point, but for this set, that's what we'll do. And you know, some of you saw the artwork on Facebook. It was pulled from the website just because there's some fine tuning that needs to be done to it. We'll just say that. I think it can be a little bit better. So that'll, you know, hopefully be back up soon and people can see the final product there. But yeah, I'm very, very excited for MicroTunnel, a name that I wasn't sure, you know, if it was ever a possibility. I thought at one point somebody had reached out to him many years ago and he had said no, but I'm glad Mike got the job done. So well done, Mike.
Thank you, Corey. Chad, any thoughts on Mr. Rotunda joining Legends of Wrestling?
Thank you for sharing that story, Corey, because I was backstage, you know, at the show. So I didn't know all that stuff. I did not know Wyndham put a plug in, but yeah, I'm very excited to have him. One of my favorites, of course, favorite of his work with Wyndham as a US Express early on in my fandom. So yeah, maybe someday we'll get those cards. But for right now, like Corey said, the Varsity Club gimmick fits in well with the Tragos Thez Hall of Fame. And certainly I would have said the same thing I said to Steve Kern when he said we couldn't use Skinner. I'd say, sir, that's fine with me. I don't want to use that guy. I don't want IRS in there. But, you know, like Tim pointed out a long time ago, if you said Mike Rotunda and Ted DiBiase would be tag champs someday, you'd be like, hey, that's a team I can get into. So maybe a Varsity Club Mike Rotunda and a Mid-South Black Glove DiBiase tag team.
There you go.
Gracing our ranks sometime soon. But yep, very excited to get him. As Corey said, we just need to tinker with the artwork a little bit. When I saw the artwork, I said to Mike, I'm like, he kind of looks like Wade Barrett facially. I'm not sure. It was the drawing was good and it just kind of took a turn a little bit. So we'll get it fixed. Warner will get it all corrected.
Yeah. We had a little coloring issue too on the jacket. I don't think Warner understood that, you know, Syracuse is orange and dark blue and suddenly we had gray. So I think that's going to get tweaked a little bit as well. So hopefully everything will work out.
I have confidence. Anyway, I think it's a great addition to the game. It just whets the appetite for promoters for more, because there will be more in Tragos and Thez Hall of Fame number 3. They'll keep coming. All right. We had a couple of Champions of the Galaxy announcements since last we convened as a group. The first of these is, let's see if I can get this right, Zulfikar? Zulfikar? We'll go with Zulfikar.
Well. Nobody knows how to pronounce his name.
Maybe that's part of the gimmick.
A man of mystery from Earth. I'm not looking at the actual promo. These are the things that I remember in my head. Any thoughts on that, gentlemen? I'll just throw it up for in general comments.
I like it. I mean, I think it looks cool. I just noticed his horse is wearing a mask, so maybe they'll both join up to Darkos.
There you go.
He says, who's this mystery man from Istanbul? Which is not Constantinople.
It is.
It is not Constantinople. But maybe someone from Constantinople will come to feud with him.
It could be a feud.
Although it could be a swerve and maybe the horse is actually the wrestler.
Oh, my God.
And then, there you go. I'm just, you never know with Tom. I mean, he loves throwing these little twists in.
Maybe the horse is from Constantinople.
It could be. And then the guy is the manager or, you know, the keeper.
Yeah, he manages the horse.
He scoops up the poop at ringside, whatever. It could be interesting.
That's why he's a big sword.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
You got to scrape that sometimes on, you know, those arena floors.
You do. Got to pay the price.
Yep.
And then we also had, and thanks for that expert analysis, guys. And we also had the Bloody Mary, who looks like a character from years ago named Retribution. I vaguely remember.
Yep. That's what
Good
I thought
call.
Too.
Good call.
And what do we think about Bloody Mary? She looks rather scary.
Yeah. I mean, I
worry about Mary because Mary is scary.
Mary's very scary.
Yeah, Mary is scary. I guess I'm glad there was a story because I wouldn't have known what to think about Bloody Mary, a name or anything else. So glad Sam did his usual good little write-up and described as a hardcore woman wrestler, so I'm very curious to see what Mary brings to the table.
It will
she's been doing work on her quads, that's for sure too. I mean, holy cow, she is
it crush you.
She it looks. I mean, she's going to be one of those that can really kind of go with that with the gladiator woman that came out recently as well. So that's just
over him.
So we'll see how those two do in the ring against each other.
Mm-hmm. Well, more to come on both of those characters. That certainly whets the appetite of GWF fans for Origins 2138, I believe. So that takes care of both Champions of the Galaxy releases. It takes care of Mike Rotunda. I don't think we do. We have an Indies release. I don't think we did since last we met.
Okay. I just checked even tonight as we're recording on a Wednesday night, not our usual schedule. And I know often Wednesday is Indies night, but nothing yet. So okay. I'm going to throw in a quick plug while I'm talking for the IPW set that's upcoming. Chad has started the work on that along with Zeke, and I've gotten to see the drafts and everything. And this is going to be a really fun set. I'm even more excited to get these IPW guys in the Filsinger Games universe.
I predict James Jeffries will be in every promotion that everyone plays.
Yes.
Very soon.
I'm putting him in my GWF Fed. So there you go. Jeffries versus Mandrill coming to an arena near you.
Jeffries versus Bloody Mary.
I'm actually going to have Malice feud with Bloody Mary. Oops, I just spoiled. Hey, I just announced a wrestler. Woo! Our podcast. Leave it in, Corey. I want to comment on Ken Shamrock since it wasn't on last week. I'm super excited to have Ken Shamrock. So thanks to the tag team of Mike Molesky and Jerry Briscoe for leaning on Ken and getting him to agree. And Jerry continues to open a lot of cool doors for us. And there's a lot of cool other people coming out in the Tragos Thez Hall of Fame set. We've seen some more artwork. Things are looking good. We have the stats all tied up and with a bow on them, and they're ready to go. Stuart has his usual awesome handbook all done. So things are rolling on this one, folks. It's going to be a great set.
We are ready. And Chad, you know, while you're at it, do you have any more comments about last week's episode? You were not able to join us, and we had our usual rip-roaring time with Mark Ashby and Matt Dickendescher.
It was a rip-snorter, you know, and like I said on the discussion board, Matt, you know, quickly threw down the gauntlet and assaulted me, but it was okay. It's okay. He made up for it. He made a good comment about Scaffold Battle Royal. I looked at Tom's column when he talked about the roster size and the need for revising guys so we didn't get, you know, this huge bloated roster. And obviously I think this was a great time to start doing that. It was the Fed had kind of hit a sweet spot with the number of guys, so having those guys, which we'll get into shortly here, was a good idea in my humble opinion. Just some comments about my card that was featured in Around the Galaxy. I think that was just a house show or I'm not sure. I must have just sent it to Mark. But Mesmer was my Galaxian champion. He was a villain at that time, and he had just turned back the challenge of Pulsar, and I think he was kind of making his way through the Titans, feuding with Boxer. And I was kind of stalling because I was waiting for Pulsar's revised card, which when it came out, he beat Mesmer for the champion. Oh my gosh, this was the first official time on record where I was involved with throwing babies in the air, because I actually threw Corey in the air, even though he was not quite a baby. He still had a diaper on at age 6. But I threw him in the air, and I believe there were
green alien babies being thrown in the air as well.
Yes, yes.
Stu would have been happy about that.
I would have been.
And I hit my head hard.
Yeah, he did. And I didn't catch him either, so he took two bumps, one on the way up, one on the way down. And then Sam and Punisher were my version of the Bomb Squad, because I had taken Adam Blast and teamed him with Vanity as the New Wave, and they were kind of like a punk new breed type team, which didn't do very well, but I had fun with them. And then with Castle Cosmos, I do believe I ran it once. I don't remember who won. Maybe someday I'll be interested enough to dig through the archives and figure that out. And then I do remember reading the Ashby Brothers reviews and could not wait to get the set. I know at the time I got the Super Report, I did not have the set yet. So that's my recollection.
Well, thank you, Chad. I just want to say I have AEW on in the background. I had a little bit of a mark out moment in an American wrestling ring. Tanahashi just came out. That's pretty darn cool. So as to where it goes from here, who knows? I think he's taking on Moxley for the interim heavyweight championship. All right. Well, thank you, Chad, again, for your recollection or your comments on last week's episode. It was a fun one. Thanks again to Mark and Matt. I really look forward to those each and every month, and I'm sure I speak for everyone when I say that. Tonight's main event is a review of a real pivotal set in Champions of the Galaxy lore. It was Invasion 2090, which has a lot of, has some updates and has some, certainly a couple of new characters that resonated with promoters, if not back then, which I was kind of surprised to see, and more on that later, certainly over time. It was a great set, set the table for a number of cool things down the road, and we're going to get into it and just start reviewing the characters, giving our impressions, our memories, our, Tim doesn't do impressions, but the rest of us will, our thoughts and memories on these particular characters, and give you just our general review of 2090. So let's start with Tim Dalton. The first characters up for discussion, Tim will lead us in this, is the tag team of the Cosmic Forces and the Immortal Doomsayer.
Thanks, Stu. You know, I really liked these when these guys came out, because I believe they were featured in the flyer, you know, the promo flyer for the set. And I just thought they looked cool. And I really liked the team. I really liked the artwork. I thought it was just kind of cool how they looked, and when they did get revised in color, that's pretty much exactly how I saw them, which is rare, how I saw them in the black and white world. They had very good success for me at times. Sometimes they were just kind of a run of the mill teams, but then other times they had two really extended runs with my interplanetary tag titles where they were just beating everybody. So I just thought that they were I thought the concept was really cool. I saw somebody on the discussion board made a comment on them and said, well, you know, I never really liked these guys because they weren't that good when they were apart. And I'm like, well, wasn't that the whole concept? That was the whole point.
That would be the concept.
So I was like, well, that clearly you have missed the point of this whole team, is that they wouldn't be that good if they were apart. And I always tried, like, during singles matches to have the other one present at ringside so you could still use all the stuff. And, but then the big payoff would be when the one guy would get banned from ringside, and then that would kind of hose the other guy. So, but I thought they were a really good team, and they had some really good success in my Fed. I used them for a long time. As far as Doomsayer, I thought he was just a weird looking little creepy guy in a floating chair, reminded me kind of MODOK from the Marvel universe, with the enormous head in the floating chair and kind of the little, you know, the little T-Rex arms and stuff. But I just thought that was really cool. And obviously, you know, Doomsayer played such a part in the Fed going forward with the Trans-Evolver and all of that. I mean, he just became a really, you know, decent player down the road. But I thought this was a great entree into the Fed. I just thought this was just a great tag team and a great manager to come in. So, and they, like I said, they had a lot of pretty good success for me down the road.
Me too. Corey, any thoughts on these three?
I was really excited when the Cosmic Forces came in. I love the gimmicks or mechanics on the back of the card. And as I look at the original cards here, it's just kind of a side topic, but it's just funny how we've come so far with mechanics, you know, and now they're all explained on the bottom of the card. Mm-hmm. And here you had to read the handbook, promoters, to see what these pluses and minuses meant. And I like how, you know, Tom set him up as one guy's stronger offensively, one's defensive, almost kind of like the Gladiators that we'll get to in a bit. But, you know, even with you know, a strong finisher for Matter and double finisher for Antimatter, they never did that well for me. I didn't get a chance to look up my Fed history. I don't think they ever held tag team titles, either Galaxian or Interplanetary. I know they were, and I'm pretty sure I told this story before, they were my last six-man tag team champions with Grunge, because they ended up getting suspended for an attack on somebody. I think it was Justice. And then it just kind of worked out time-wise that this was when they became Monad. So I just kind of, you know, stripped them of the belts and then just kind of got rid of the belts because this team of three was now two people. So, So, I mean, I always liked the concept, but was kind of disappointed. They kind of underperformed for me.
I believe I had the same issue because I think they were my interplanetary tag team champions when the Monad card came out.
Yeah.
And so they came out for a tag title defense and it was one guy. And they're like, what the hell's going on here? And so I wound up stripping them of the titles because one guy can't defend the tag titles.
Yep.
You know, but I had the same, I had the same thing happen because I believe they were my IP tag champs. So they kind of lost the belts without losing the belts.
Yeah. Yep. And then Doomsayer, like Tim said, you know, big, obviously a big part of GWF history for many years. You know, it's kind of a cool drawing for what he was. I think the detail and everything is really cool. I think, you know, I kind of miss the days when we'd have a card like Doomsayer where he was just, it just had a distractor. He didn't need a chart or anything else in the back. You know, not that, I mean, charts are fine, but I think of a couple of real life wrestling managers that if we ever signed them for Legends, it's kind of hard. What do you do for them? You know, they're just, they're good talkers. You give them a distractor rating and that's about all I would want to do, but we can't really do that anymore. So, you know, that's in that sense is kind of a cool card for that reason.
And he technically couldn't interfere anyway, cause he's in the floating chair.
Yeah. That was in the book.
I mean, you know, maybe you could do something where you gave him like two distractor ratings instead mm-hmm. of, you know, an interference or something like that. But I mean,
yep.
Yeah, I mean, that it was an interesting character that way.
Yep.
I agree.
Yep. Another thing that you had to read about in the book.
Chad, any memories of the Cosmic Forces and Doomsayer?
Well, regarding Doomsayer, I think I had him shoot like a laser beam out of his chair to interfere or something like that, like a little stun ray or something. I, you know, not to jump on the bandwagon, but I'm pretty sure they held tag belts for me when they got merged into Monad 2. And I think was, so Nth Degree wasn't around yet, but was Pollux with the team?
No.
Who was it? Oh, no. I had Tendron. Came out to defend the belts and they got their asses whipped by whoever. But yeah, I think they held the belts for me, you know, both my Interplanetary and Galaxy a couple times. Of course, they're feuding with the Greek gods who are permanently my Galaxian tag champs. You're bound to win a match sooner or later. You know, the one thing I noticed on Matter's card, even though he's supposed to be the tough offensive guy, he's got a lot. He's got the double dazed one on level two defense, you know, so he's not exactly a pushover, and he has two defensive tags on level three. But yeah, I remember, didn't Animator hold your TV title, Tim?
Yes, Chad, he did, said Tim after a short delay because he was looking up his title histories.
Yeah.
I just minimized everything and I was pulling up my title histories to take a look and see if they did anything else. But yeah, Antimatter had a really good run too with my TV title was for like undercard guys. And so he had a pretty good run with that. If I remember correctly here and if I can find it quickly.
And a few, while Tim's doing that, a few nuances, we can see that Antimatter does not have an out of the ring and he has a move two with a choice E, which is now been, you know, assigned to move three moves only. So, you know, I think as we've looked back at some of these older cards, I think we have this romantic notion that about the third set, Tom really solidified the rules to the game, but that's not the case. Oh, here we have Matter. He has both a choice A and into the ropes. So just to show that sometimes some of these things kind of gelled later in the game's history.
Yeah, I'd say a lot of those common rules probably came about in like the maybe Sudden Death Revolution, Civil War era maybe. And even I feel like, and getting off topic a little bit, but I think some of the choice things like E being a three move, I feel like that didn't come until much later because I know a lot of our NGO bootlegs, we made that mistake but maybe it was just something we didn't catch. So I feel like that was a later change.
Yeah, I'm flipping through some of the other cards we'll talk about later too. And again, I'm not like, you know, making shit of Tom or anything. It's just some of these game rules weren't.
Yeah, they weren't
finalized. They weren't solidified. Right. But yeah, it feels like we always, I think when we thought, oh yeah, these things got tied up pretty good, but they did not.
No, they lasted for a while, some of the things until that kind of got nailed down. But yeah, so they, so I'm looking and Antimatter was my first TV champion. And then on their the Cosmic Forces second title reign was when they merged into Monad. I stripped him of the belts, and then Mason Dregs won a tournament to win the titles. So, but yeah, that was fun.
They were tag champions for me too, completing the circle, as it were. A cycle, I should say, not circle. Anyway, they were GWF tag champions for me. They were pretty darn successful. I always liked Matter better than Antimatter because he had the offense, and I just liked the drawing a little better for whatever reason. Never did us any kind of singles push with either one of them, but I certainly enjoyed them as a tag team. One of my better tag teams in the early days of Champions of the Galaxy. So fond memories of that team. Next up, we've got the Immortal Star Warrior, and Pulsar got a little bit of an update into what was called Pulsar Prime at that particular time. So, Corey, why don't you lead us in the discussion on these two fan favorites?
Absolutely, Stu. So these were, as Stu mentioned, you know, two of the upgrades from characters in the original set for this set. Two of the fan favorites, the heroes at the time, of course, Star Warrior already, you know, having one of the top cards in the game, but really getting the bump up here. This was the first card to have a pin rating of 4-1. He had the three uncovered moves on level two offense. His original card had three, but number four was covered by a choice. And probably the biggest thing on this card is we had the introduction of a roll finisher with the Cosmic Big Bang. And again, my earlier comment about mechanics being spelled out, this could miss on a one. So if you got the original printing, it doesn't say that. It just says roll and there's no explanation on the card. You had to read the handbook, promoters. But yeah, he could miss it on a one, but then this was also the first finisher that could go beyond a plus four potentially. So very, you know, very tough card. I'm interested why, you know, Tom, I mean, obviously we've seen in the super reports that Thantos had a good stronghold here on the belt for a while. So maybe Tom felt the need to bump up Star Warrior a little bit, even though, you know, looking at the two original cards, you'd think they'd be pretty competitive. But as I think I mentioned this before, for me, this card never held my Galaxian title. I think he had a good interplanetary reign, but he was just kind of the guy in the Fed who was a top star, didn't need the belt necessarily to get over, although I would have liked him to have held it once, but he just never picked it up. Pulsar Prime, huge upgrade from his original card. You know, with so few guys at this point having double finishers, he had a double finisher, a zero and a plus one. I liked that Tom always kept the Whirlwind as one of his finishers, no matter the era. And I just thought that was just a cool little touch. It sometimes kind of annoyed me when Tom would upgrade a character and not have his finisher anywhere on the card, you know, even as a three move. You know, it's one thing when Star Warrior's finisher is kind of an upgrade of the previous finisher. I get that, but you know, something that they did and is not on the card in any form, that just kind of bugged me, but that's a little thing. But this card was big for me. Right about the time I was bringing in the 2090 guys, Pulsar with his original card pulled off a huge upset and won the interplanetary title from Bishop Hell. And it was kind of a thing where I'm thinking, okay, this isn't going to last long. And then it lasted a long time. And then it just transitioned into his Pulsar Prime card. So I kept the belt on him then. And he ended up at that time setting the record for the longest reign of any championship. I believe it was like 31 cards or something, not all defenses, but that many cards. And I'd like to kind of break it down now, go back and find those old notebooks and see how many defenses that was. But yeah, this card did really well for me when it was first introduced. I like it that, you know, Mark Ashby kind of mentioned that he thought Pulsar might even get a bigger push at this, or a bigger upgrade with this card. This is a pretty dramatic upgrade, you know, if you look at it. And but I like that Tom just kind of, you know, it was definitely a more competitive card, but not up to the level of like Star Warrior, Thantos, Wolf, and some of the other top names. You know, definitely could pull off upsets, but, you know, just wasn't there quite yet. So,
thank you, Corey. Tim, any thoughts on Pulsar Prime and Star Warrior?
I think, you know, I at least based on the results in my Fed, I mean, Star Warrior did need a little bit of a boost at that point to kind of get to that Thantos level, because Thantos really did kind of, you know, dominate the action for me. But I think his the strong card held my Galaxian title once very late in his run, and it bled over into when he got the tag card with Thantos as they reformed the Game Master. And so he was my heavyweight champion then. And I believe one of his last title defenses was with the tag team card. But that was, I thought that was very cool. And I liked the Pulsar update a lot. It was nice because I always thought he was like a very popular character that just couldn't win. You know, he was one of these guys, people liked him a lot. He kind of had a lot of personality to him, even though his card stunk. And he would get the win because he did have that plus one, which back then a plus one was still a decent finisher. But he just, you couldn't really get him to do anything. He might get the upset here and there and maybe hold on for a couple of cards, you know, a couple of defenses, but he couldn't really string anything together. But this one, I think it gave him a better chance at becoming like that secondary champion and being able to go on a little bit of a run.
Thank you, Tim. Chad.
I really like both these guys. I don't think they actually ever held the tag belts for me. But I know Pulsar Prime had success at the interplanetary level. He won my Galaxian title for Mesmer, as I mentioned before. And, you know, then down the road, him and Dragon Master, when they became the Titan Express again, did a lot of great stuff for me. Warrior, he was a champion, I think, a couple times with this card. I've never really gone back through my title history to determine what iteration of wrestlers held what card. But I also know with that tag card, he got like one last run and upset Chaos, I think, for my my title. So he did get a hold of it under that. But I really like both of these. I kind of wonder if maybe Star Warrior, it was done just to give him a little more personality too. because, you know, Wolf was very popular, Phantom was very popular. But like your main good guy wrestler maybe wasn't as popular, but I think that also kind of morphed into later how down the road he became the Avenging Warrior and became a very flawed guy because, you know, everybody has flaws. So I liked both these guys and they did good things for me.
Yeah, Star Warrior for me, right off the bat, his first card was on par with Thanatos. I mean, it was those two with Wolf a little bit in the interim there between the two of them in terms of being the dominant wrestler in my Fed. So it's not like Star Warrior's first card really failed abysmally for me. He was definitely there. This iteration of Star Warriors did equally as well, if not better. I have to go back and look at my records from back then, but he was a multi-time GWF champion and some great success with that particular card. I always liked that card. Like the Big Bang, I just thought it was a well put together card and fun to use. I always thought he was Terry Taylor. So, looks like Terry Taylor. So Pulsar Prime didn't do a whole lot with him when I was originally playing the Fed canon style by the book. Since then, I have done more with Pulsar Prime. I just had a very successful run with him and Quasar as my GWF tag team champions, feuding with the team of the Draconian Sheik and Count Necros. And that was a fun feud, and it's still going. And that it was a fun tag team with Quasar, not done with those two yet. So I'd like to see if I could get the belts back around them. They have lost the belts as of now. So we'll see. But I like Pulsar. I really liked Pulsar down the road, but that's a story for another day. But I liked this upgrade and gave us a solid upper card or upper mid card player in Pulsar Prime. Next up, we had Mitsuko, if I'm saying that right, and Tarak. And we'll have Chad lead the discussion on these two characters. Chad?
Yeah, so I volunteered to take these two guys and discuss them tonight because they're both kind of unique characters. You know, I was always a Beast Rider fan. I know that was not popular, but to heck with it, I liked them. And, you know, this was a long-awaited upgrade. It was better than where he was, I'll say that. And, you know, I guess the whole alliance between the Titans and the Space Crappers was kind of cool to see. And I kind of like how it talked about in Pulsar's bio too, about how, you know, the Titans had done as much as him to help them as he can. So they turned him over to Omega, the Living Legend, you know, that sort of thing. It wasn't, you know, could Tarak and Renegade now beat Vanity and assorted cronies? Yes. Are they going to win the Galaxian titles? Probably not, but you know, you still got an interplanetary team. And it's just kind of fun to have some mid-carders with personality. Speaking of which, Mitsuko the Mongol, the first person who only had a tag team finisher, right? Yep, that's what I thought. I like this because I was always a big Genghis Khan fan. And, you know, this was a guy who was definitely a tag team specialist. And yeah, I liked him. I thought it was fun artwork and everything. He's got his ninja stars and his giant sword and his Mongolian diaper on. And it's a cool card. And, you know, it helped kind of flesh out the mid card, having him and Khan in there. They're not going to be your Galaxian title holders, but they can certainly contend for the interplanetary tag titles. And just the whole shifting of all the Earth guys together to form the All Earth Squad to battle Vanity's evil wild things. And fans, I don't know if I've shared this story, but I've made a bootleg character. I have the artwork done. So when Vanity and Reptila were tag partners, I don't know if you know this. Stu, Corey and Tim, I think, know this, but I don't think Stu knows this by the look on his face. Vanity had an affair with Reptilo's sister.
You did tell me this.
So now I have a bootleg artwork for the Gorgeous Gecko. And fans, picture Reptilo with blonde hair and a Ric Flair robe, and that is the Gorgeous Gecko. And someday we'll get him put together because he is a fantastic character from days of old.
I would like the Gorgeous Gecko.
He's probably going to be green.
I was just going to say he's going to be green, but, you know.
I always saw Reptilo as green. I mean, duh.
That's a given. They're all green. All right, Tim, your thoughts on these characters?
I liked them both. I was never a Beast Rider hater either. But I thought the upgrade, you know, it wasn't a big upgrade, but at least it made him a little bit more competitive. So I thought that was good. He was still, you know, he's still good in tag matches. So that was solid. And, you know, it's funny looking back, I had completely forgotten before we did the episode with, you know, last time with the, you know, with the super report, I'd forgotten that he originally came in as a good guy. You know, I mean, it kind of escaped because I always thought of him as a bad guy. And then I'm like, oh, that's right. Yeah. When he first came in, he was a good guy because they turned Genghis Khan and brought him into the earth guys. But I liked him. I thought he was really cool. I thought it was nice to have a tag specialist. I thought it was just something different, you know, because you almost had with him and Genghis Khan, you almost had two tag team specialists, even though Khan had a singles finish. You know, you had two tag team guys really teaming up that were just, you know, had a ton of defensive tags. I just thought it was a cool idea. And I liked both of them. I was very happy with both these guys.
Thank you, Tim. Corey, any memories of these two fine characters?
Yeah, Tarek. I was always a Savage Kingdom fan, so I was glad Tarek had a little more competitive card here. Obviously, again, not a Galaxian champion, but just a little more, you know, longer matches now, lower pin rating, stronger finisher. So I really, really enjoyed this upgrade. And, you know, he was always kind of the manager, so to speak, for his guys. But this also made him a little more competitive wrestler. So yeah, had a lot of fun with him. And then Mitsuko, I too, like we've said, you know, I loved the fact that he only had a tag finisher, just something to set him apart. And especially at this time frame, late 80s and into the early 90s, you had a lot of real life tag teams where I could see guys just having a tag finisher and not any kind of singles finisher, you know, not a lot maybe, but a few, especially like a lower card or mid card team, you know, they would just team up and not do a lot of singles matches. So I liked that Tom did that for him. And I too had forgotten about the All Earth Squad. Since I had purchased many of the sets, and again, I started later, but since I purchased many of the sets, you know, at once and kind of planned ahead a little bit, I don't think I ever did them as baby faces. I think I just had them as their own team. And I don't remember, you know, who's their enemies were initially, but I never really did them as a baby face. I didn't really see Genghis Khan as a believable baby face. So never really did that alliance.
All right. Well, thank you for that, Corey. Appreciate those memories. Tarek, he was always one that I wanted a little bit more out of. I don't know why. I kind of liked his drawings. I just thought he could have been slightly stronger. I was a fan. I was a fan of his tag team with Renegade. So I don't know. I just was hoping for a little bit more, but, you know, he's still a memorable character and memorable in a lot of promoters' feds. Up next, we have certainly for me, the greatest tag team in my Federation's history in terms of total title reigns, and that would be the Gladiators of Bruton Massacre. These were their 2090 cards, their big upgrade, their cleansing. In fact, I had to remind myself before the episode that this is the edition of the Gladiators that I still use, so I couldn't remember. So this particular edition, compared to the rest of the tag teams, I mean, they were strong. They were stacked. I mean, Massacre got really strong in terms of offensive prowess and his double finishers. And Brute got a little bit better in terms of being a little more usable versus his first card. His first card was a little tough to use sometimes. It could make for some very long matches. And Brute was very tough to knock off his feet. This was a major upgrade, or a significant enough upgrade for these particular cards that it did put them over the top for me. I mean, there was not a whole lot of separation in the early days between the Gladiators and the Greek Gods for me, but when this edition came out, that separation got wider. The Gladiators became the dominant tag team in my Federation, still are. I still use them to this day occasionally, so still have a lot of fun with them. I know they're near and dear to a lot of promoters' hearts. Tim, any thoughts or memories on the Gladiators, on getting them at the time? Were they a big success for you?
Well, they kind of started out because there were two versions. There was the version that came out with the set originally, which was an upgrade, but wasn't that big of an upgrade. And then there was a set that of the corrected stats that we got at Galacticon, I believe was the first time they were made available. And so they were given out there, and then you looked at them and you were like, holy crap, these guys are freaking going to crush people. And so that's when they kind of, you know, went from being a really good team to being kind of that road warrior dominant, just beat the crap out of everybody team. And yeah, they dominated my Fed too. I had actually, at the time these guys came out, Brute and Spike were teaming for me and Massacre was doing singles. And Brute and Spike were my tag champs, and it held it for quite a while, and we're actually doing pretty well. And what I did was I had them, my annual tag team tournament was coming up. And so I had Brute and Spike vacate the belts, and then Brute and Massacre came into the tag tournament together with the new cards, and they wound up winning the tournament and wound up winning the titles. So, and then they went on a tear where they held it for like 34 cards or something like that. So, yeah, really strong team. They were probably the dominant team in my Fed's history. Just a fantastic and cool update. So, and really started that whole Gladiator you know, that mystique about them being so tough.
Thanks, Tim. Corey, how about you?
Yeah, I was really excited for this upgrade. They had done really well with their initial cards. They were with their 2087 cards, they were champion six times, and then only actually captured the belts two more times with these newer, tougher cards. But the reigns were longer, so you know it kind of evened out in a sense. But I just love the fact, you know, we had a strong finisher on Massacre with that +4 tag. You know, still with tag finishers being relatively new and not every tag team having tag finishers, this was definitely, they put them in another category. Always loved Brute having that level one defense with all reversals. Just thought that was a really cool thing. Of course, his offense sucked and it could lead to some long matches. We've talked about that before. But just love that he had that just tough start of the match card, you know, where he's going to be hard to hurt. So you really got to hit him with a lot to get him hurting and get him down. So yeah, definitely a legendary tag team in GWF history.
Thanks, Corey. Chad, how did the Gladiators fare for you, their 2090 edition?
I think they did better for me than they did prior. I mean, the Greek Gods were the best team in my Fed's history, but these guys are probably second with Titan Power. But I also remember, I mean, because Massacre's card is pretty tough. So even when you rolled him in a singles match, I think he held the Interplanetary belt for me still as well. And I know Massacre was a very historic figure in Mark's Fed. And I guess we'll have to ask him if this card did anything. Because I also remember Mark using Brute and Spike as a tag team. I think a lot of people did that when Spike came out, just to kind of mixed things up a bit. So I don't know how long that continued for folks once these cards came out. And like Tim said, there were different stats originally. So the black and white stats that you have and the color card stats are the second version of them. And Tom did give away those cards at Galacticon. There'll be a Cub Galactica Super Report we'll review sometime in the future where it will talk about how Tom, you know, decided, I want these a little tougher. This didn't quite turn out how I wanted. I don't know. Do you remember that, Tim? Had you started getting the Super Report?
I think I had started getting it by the time I think I got it right before the first Galacticon rolled around.
Okay.
So yeah, I would have been getting it at that point.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm not sure how far down the line between where we reviewed last week and where, when we get to Galacticon, it is, I don't remember.
And I do remember Tom talking about it at Galacticon, but I just don't remember anything you said.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, there was an article in Club. So I almost feel like I got my revised copies before Galacticon. But then certainly through the years, Tom had quite a few left over and he would just give them away at Galacticon. So, you know, if you're a collector and you want a copy of these, you know, check around. There might be some of us who have an extra copy or two to spare. But yeah, I mean, obviously this did a lot to cement them as the greatest team for most folks. And I think Tim said, it started the whole Gladiator tag team specialist dominance thing off with in a big way and started the whole idea of the cleansing. We didn't really talk about that. You know, they got called back to Aethra and were purged of their weaknesses. I think it says in the book here and came back and they're ready to kick some booty.
And I was going to ask as a kind of a follow-up, Chad, you alluded to this. A lot of people had Massacre as a strong singles competitor in their feds with a good history. Did Tim or Corey, did y'all have that success with him or no? Just curious.
I didn't use him a lot in the singles, but I remember just kind of a highlight and actually his last match during the Civil War. Of course, this was the special edition with the Larry Snelly drawings, but the same stats. I don't think there were any changes to the stats. You know, last match of the Civil War is an Aether ultimate escape between the two Gladiator teams. And it got down to the two captains, Massacre and Vengeance, and Massacre won, nice. Which I was shocked, you know, again, just having... I mean, I knew it was a tough card, but Vengeance having a strong finisher and that add one. I just figured, well, okay, the new team's going to win it and, you know, start things off strong, but it was almost kind of the retirement match for the original Gladiators that Captain Massacre got to go over in the match. So that was and it was a really good match. It was a long match, Stu, and I finished it. No.
Wow.
Sorry. Couldn't help it. Sorry.
To go.
that was a really cool way to wrap up his career.
Cool. I never gave Massacre much of a singles run, but I don't know. In hindsight, maybe I should have. He definitely had the card to do it.
I thought the first card too was, you know, solid as a singles card as well. I mean, because he did have a 7-4 pin, but he only had one down.
Right.
So he was tough to you know get off his feet and get down and work him over. So, and I know that I think that card is what kind of started the whole thing with Mark. I think he had a lot of success with that card. So, but I did give him a little bit of the singles push just to kind of team Brute and Spike. And he did well. I'm not sure he really did a lot in the titles department, but I know he was always a strong competitor and won a bunch of matches with the singles cards. So, but yeah, I thought that was fun just to kind of change things up a little bit.
Well, and for me, actually, Brute, his original card captured the Galaxian title before the, well, just with the original 24.
Yeah.
I think he might have beat, who did he beat? Maybe Star Warrior? I'm not sure. And, you know, like I said, Massacre did some amplanetary level stuff for me.
I had him in my original tournament for the Galaxian Championship. I have no idea why, but I did. So I gave Brute a little glory. Well, next up is one of my absolute all-time favorite characters. Still love him to this day. Depending, it, you know, no matter how you say his name, he's one of the great ones. Kraken Got an upgrade in 1990 or a different, or 1990, 20, in the 2090 edition, got a different card or an or a different edition released for Kraken. Tim, what say you about Kraken and his success in 2090? Do you remember him fondly at this time, or are you still partial to that original card?
Kraken, whatever you want to call him. When he got his Krakalakken. The Hitman for Hire card where he kind of went solo. I thought it was a great drawing. I just thought it was outstanding drawing by Chuck. Really good. I think this was one of those cards where it's a different card, but I don't know if it's an upgrade or not. I mean, because some things got better on his card, like his level two offense is better, but then there are some things that got worse on his card too. So it's really more of a lateral move, I think. So I'm not sure he really got a lot stronger, you know, with the update. But I was kind of sad though, because I was a big fan of the Society of Death, and it was just kind of sad to see them go, because I did like, they were such an eclectic kind of unit that I always kind of liked them, and him as that kind of gung-ho leader that was in there, you know, kind of giving the orders and bossing everybody around. So I was kind of glad, I was kind of sad to see that team kind of disband, but I really did like this card. I'm not sure I ever really used him as the, you know, lone wolf hitman gimmick that he was kind of made to be, but a lot of fun. And I like the card a lot.
Thank you, Tim. Chad.
I agree with Tim. You know, it was definitely a lateral move and was just more of an image change or a gimmick change. And, you know, there were some improvements, there were some downgrades, and it kind of kept him on the same level. I think I did use him as the hitman. I recall maybe him coming in to help out the Royal Court some. That probably was it. Maybe the Galactic Rebels. I don't know if somebody went down, but I agree. This is a fantastic, I mean, I love the original Kraken drawing, and this is just fantastic. Really, really like it a lot. But as Tim said, I was sad to see the Society of Death go. They were some good people.
Society of Death members go. Corey, any thoughts on Kraken?
Yeah, pretty similar to what Chad and Tim said, as far as just kind of a lateral change, not really an upgrade or downgrade. Just kind of going back to his original 2087 card, he had the one down and the pin of 4, 7, 7, 4. And I know promoters today sometimes complain that 4 is a bad pin rating, but for me, that card did better than this card. And, you know, here he's got lower pin rating, but 2 downs. So it's just all, you know, it's a variety of factors. You can't only look at the pin rating. That original card for me was tough. I enjoyed the character more now, I think, just having a little more personality in the hitman gimmick. Even if he didn't do as well for me, I liked him a little better. And I loved when he teamed up with the mercenaries. I can't remember if they held the 6-man belts, but they were definitely challengers for the 6-man belts right before Kraken became a full-time manager. And, you know, I just really, really liked that trio. But yeah, definitely a cool card. I love that the drawing's got his hitman's card pictured in his hand above his gun. I just thought that was a cool little touch that Chuck incorporated. And I like that here the finisher didn't change, but, you know, Tom just kind of added the gimmick that he throws the card in and then drives him into the mat. So same move and same finisher rating. But just, you know, just a new way of looking at it.
Yeah, that I'm always partial to the 2087 card. I've just done so much with that card. Now that I play Chrono Style, I can't give that card up. So, I mean, it is a great drawing, but the 2087 Kraken for me is just, that's Kraken. And that's the one for me that I just will always keep, but I can definitely understand the allure of having the Hitman gimmick. It was fun. It was different. And it was well done. Next up, we have a favorite of a lot of promoters. I didn't do a whole lot with him. Had a couple of good feuds, if memory serves. Never did much in the championship gold realm, but an interesting figure because a lot of promoters certainly were quite passionate about him, and that's Iron Maiden. And to get our discussion going about Iron Maiden, we're going to go to Corey first. So Corey, lead us on, sir.
Thank you, Stu. Yeah, I was always a big Animan fan, especially these initial characters, and I was really excited when they brought in Iron Maiden. You know, interesting card setup wise. I believe this was the first card to have a death jump and two out of the rings as far as like not a choice G or H. I'm pretty sure. I could be off on that.
I think you're right.
Yeah, I just remember getting the card and like, oh, this is a cool setup, and you know, not having seen that before. So he was actually Galaxian champion for me. He had a short reign. He won the belt from Spike in kind of an upset. Ended up losing it to Chaos, not a long run, but it was that was Chaos's first reign, so he was kind of the transitional champ to Chaos in that era. And never really had a lot of other success. He did well in my secondary Fed that I started after the first Sudden Death. I had some good history there, and I kept him around for quite a while just as a good competitive upper mid card guy. He had that history of being a GWF Galaxian champ for me, so that just kind of played into him, and you know, he kept that as part of his accomplishment. So yeah, definitely a fun card. Definitely, you know, more of a singles guy compared to the other Animan. Not that you couldn't use him in a tag, but definitely geared to be more of a singles competitor.
Thank you, Corey. Tim, how did Iron Maiden fare in your Fed?
I think the only, you know, he was a fun character to use. I think the card stats really kind of fit in with the character very well. And I don't think he had a lot of singles success. I think he won my special matches title once. And, you know, when I talked about the Gladiators kind of going on their initial run after winning the tag team tournament that I did, the Galaxian Cup, they wound up actually the team that finally beat them after their kind of historic run as the Ultimate Gladiators was Badger and Iron Maiden. So that was kind of a big deal there that they were the first ones to kind of knock them off the throne. So, and I know I hate being knocked off the throne when I'm on there. So it was just, he was a good character, but never really kind of always in the mix, but never really did a lot title wise for me. But I thought it was a cool character.
Just leave me alone when on the throne. Chad, thoughts on Iron Maiden?
You were on the throne? What are you? Are you talking about Steve Minskoff's bathroom from last week? Oh, Stuart. I liked Iron Maiden. I think he had some success at the interplanetary level for me. And like Corey said, he had the kind of that unique setup. I know later he does do some tag stuff with Badger, but he wasn't really built for it. He just has the one defensive tag smack in the middle of level two defense, which is kind of an oddity. But he was a cool character, and I think people got into somebody who could kind of go toe-to-toe with Spike and probably split it a lot of the time.
Agreed. I do need to use him more. I think he's an interesting character. I think he could do more for me in terms of even contending for a top belt. So more to come on Iron Maiden for this promoter.
Just a quick question, just because my memory is so bad. Did he ever get an upgrade?
No, he didn't.
That's what I thought, because he was pretty strong. He's one of the few that I think really just had that one card from start to finish and was just solid.
There was always clamor for him to get an upgrade. And I always remember people saying, let's see Iron Maiden upgrade, but it never happened. So
I mean, I kind of like that there's some cards like that, though. You know?
Yeah, there are. Mm-hmm. That makes them unique.
I would agree.
Yep.
Totally. The last card in the set that we'll review, and the last card in the set for our purposes tonight, is Death Mask, that we actually talked about a little bit last week on our episode on the Club Galactica Super Report. We talked a little bit about how Death Mask could make his mask solidify and could use that as a weapon against his opponents. Death Mask was the evolution of Death Knight. And I just never did a whole lot with him. I guess I couldn't get beyond the mask solidifying thing, or I just tried to use that as just, he had a loaded mask and utilize that as a weapon instead of the mask solidifying. But he never did a whole lot for me, but I know he was wildly popular for other promoters. Certainly one Pete Beck, I guess it inspired a love affair for him for that's been going on to this day with Death Knight and his ilk. Any thoughts on Death Mask in general? Did he have any success for you guys? We'll start with, let's start with Corey this time.
You know, this was a, you know, talking about all the upgrades in this set, obviously this was a bigger one. You know, that Death Knight had that high pin rating of 9-6 and just a zero finisher. And here, this was a pretty strong one, especially with the two finishers and one of them being a +3. And so I really expected that he would do tremendously better than Death Knight did. And just taking a quick overview of my history, he did have a brief heavy metal title reign when I had the heavy metal cage match belt. Won it from Mayhem, and I think that was, I remember that being an upset because Mayhem had won it, and I really wanted to give Mayhem a long push as that heavy metal champ. And I think I kind of threw in Death Mask as almost like maybe what I thought would be an easier challenger, and Death Mask ended up winning it. I should never assume that. You know, and he didn't hold that belt very long. You know, just I couldn't find a lot and I'm just looking at title histories, not you know, full records and things like that, but could not find a lot that he did for me. So I was kind of a little disappointed there. Love the drawing, as we've said before, in regard to the Super Report, and kind of explained my interpretation of the meltdown. I think it's pretty similar to everybody on here where, you know, I didn't do the solidifying thing. He just used that. The mask on the card was a headgear worn to the ring like Vader. And then, you know, he'd bring it in and use it as a weapon or headbutt the guy with it. He had a regular mask on when he wrestled. Always liked the loaded glove too, just as his weaker finisher, that he's got these two cheating finishers for both of his moves. So, you know, it always seemed like Tom gave, you know, like Bishop Hell had the flying cross as an actual wrestling move. Where the Hellfire was the dastardly move, but here this guy had two dirty moves. So just thought that was fun for his character. And yeah, it surprises me how fans have gotten into him long term, especially Pete with Death Knight 2. And I used Death Knight 2 later in my CPC. And I think I had Death Mask return as kind of his manager to accompany him so he could get away with his version of the loaded glove. Just a interesting character overall, the history and the changes.
I even think there was a Death Knight 3 in the GWFZ sets, as a matter of course. So,
yep.
Chad, any memories of Death Mask?
So, I mean, right from the outset, I'm like, how can he take a pile driver? I just thought that was a ridiculous helmet. So then, you know, when Vader came along a little bit, you know, I guess around the same time that I probably first saw Vader, I'm like, okay, he takes the helmet off. And, you know, as was mentioned, I think some of you guys saw it as maybe a loaded headbutt, because I also did not figure out how the referee could see the mask molecules hardening. But I didn't split the assassin tag teams. I liked the Blood Brothers and I liked, what were Death Mask and the Headsman? I like Death Knight and Executioner, so I actually kept them together, and I used the Meltdown as a tag team finisher, which obviously made them a lot better. And kind of saw it as like the Demolition Decapitation, because I just thought those I liked them the way they were, mostly because I was, like I said, I was a fan of the Blood Brothers, so I didn't want to split the teams up. So I think they held my belts, you know, maybe once or, you know, again, Galaxian or Interplanetary level, probably about the same as the Cosmic Forces under those guys. So, a good upgrade, definitely made him better, but kind of like Beast Rider, didn't make him that much better, but I think it's okay. I think it's okay for a lower guy just to bump up to the mid card a bit, or the lower mid card, instead of going from the undercard to main eventer. I don't know if that always makes sense. And I think Tom did a good job with that. Like we'll see with Ursa Major down the line and stuff, other guys where they kind of progress throughout their career and then actually started coming down too. I thought that was kind of cool. You know, and the one thing I forgot to put on the run sheet were the two special matches that were included in this and the rule change on power and agility. So the power and agility rule was You know, it used to be that if somebody had a, doesn't work if somebody's power agility is a negative number. So if you were fighting somebody whose power was -1 and you had a -3, but you rolled that move, they would actually take over because theirs was negative. And this is where Tom's like, no, it should be based on whose is better. So that was an interesting development. I'll let one of you guys talk about the two other matches that are in the set.
Well, does anybody have those matches in front of them?
Well, I know. Yeah, it was the torture chamber and the torture chamber and the hitman match, correct?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yep. Go ahead, Corey. Yep. I got the book right here.
Yeah, I thought I remember, you know, even before I played, when Chad got the set, seeing the picture on the back of those two matches and thinking those looked cool and wanting to know more about them. And the torture chamber, you know, it sounded really cool at the time, but then it's kind of like, well, it's this supposed to be kind of a smaller structure. It's not like Hell in a Cell or something like that. It's almost like the Sheik's shark cage in the Detroit territory where it's, I know they did something like it in WCW with Scott Steiner a couple of times near the end where it was just very small space. Trust me, Chad, it happened.
I'm sure it did. I just don't freaking, I don't remember my second bachelor party.
Yeah, right. I was there. Believe me, it happened.
You fought Scott Steiner in a cage?
No, well, not yet. But no, okay. Your bachelor party.
Oh. Scott Steiner was at my bachelor party?
Oh, dude, you'd be surprised who was there.
Holy shit.
And Scott Baio as well.
Oh, fuck that guy.
But anyway, the torture chamber, you know, it seemed like a cool idea. And I know there was some talk in the last year as far as with the Ringside Companion, as far as people, how they interpret winning the three times, you know, do you reset it as almost kind of a 3 out of 5 falls match? That's how I always did it. But then talking to people later at Galacticon, it's like, well, that's not really how it's termed. And I could see why people would just, you know, keep the guy on level 3 offense and keep attacking, keep going. It's that made sense as well. So, definitely kind of a match. I didn't run it a whole lot, but it was definitely one that I used here and there. And then the Hitman match was Kraken's introduction, where it was kind of a... let's see, I don't have the rules in front of me, but the you had a pole match with the, kind of the, his bounty money, I think was supposed to be the prize that he'd put on somebody. And I think you just said, I don't think there were really too many special gimmicks. I know that if you did certain charts, you just said whip into the pole 3. And then if you scored a pin, it was just assumed that you climbed the pole and got the prize. I do remember about this time doing a match with him and Star Warrior under the rules, and there was an injury after the match. So I said the Star Warrior did the Cosmic Big Bang off of the pole and put Kraken out of action. So it was pretty hardcore for its time. But just kind of two fun matches here. We didn't have many other matches than those, the Cosmic Cage and Titan Death, and those introductory ones up till now. So definitely cool to have a couple more.
Yeah, I don't think I used the Hitman match too much, but I mean, the Torture Chamber, that was a good feud
ender.
I used
the Torture Chamber, yeah.
Because I always did the thing where, because I assumed you were just supposed to keep beating your opponent, so I always kept him on level 3 after the first, you know, fall, so to speak. You know, doing finger quotes on a podcast doesn't really work, but you get my drift. So I that's the way I always assumed. You just keep pounding on him and see what happens. So. But I like that. That was a good feud ender for me. I mean, that was a nice, you know, if you didn't want to do the steel or the Cosmic Cage, you know, match, that was a nice one, especially you get some crazier guys out there that are willing to kind of just go and just, you know, beat the crap out of each other. So I liked them. I liked them both, although I didn't really have a lot of use for the Hitman match because I wasn't, like I said, I didn't really use Kraken in that role too much.
Deal. And any thoughts on Deathmask to wrap this up, Tim?
You know, he didn't do squat for me. I mean, I guess if that'll tie it up in a bow. You know, he didn't really do anything for me. And I did the loaded headbutt thing too, because I'm like, you know, how are you gonna, you know, how is somebody gonna drop an elbow on this, you know, Galactus mask that he's wearing? And you know, what the heck is going on here with the headgear? But he didn't I don't even know if he won a title for me, but I thought he was a cool character, and I'm sure I used him a lot, but just never got into the title mix for me.
Good deal. He didn't get in the title mix for me either. I don't think I could get past the big helmet either. Although I just finally figured out, I just figured it was a mask that he took the thing off and there he had a mask. And I came in later, so I had seen Vader. So, you know, it did kind of help, I guess, from that standpoint. But Pete, we're glad you love the character. And with that, that completes our, Chad, you had something?
You came in later and you had seen Vader. You're very a poet and you didn't know it.
A very good limerick. You have lots of talent there.
You said it, dude.
I guess I did. You're pointing out I did that. And with that, that completes our review of 2090. Again, it was a pivotal set. Had some great new characters, some great upgrades / changes to some existing characters. And it was just, you know, a well-received set and a very important set for promoters who could see that this game was going to continue and were enthused by that. So fun trip down memory lane for this particular set. It was definitely one of my early favorites. I liked it in comparison to 2088, 2089. I remember liking 2090 quite a bit and thinking it was just a great set. And probably my memory of Star Warrior getting that upgrade put it over the top for me. Well, with that, it is time for us to wrap up this edition and go to our shout outs. So, Corey, why don't you lead the way this evening? What's on your mind, sir?
Well, thank you, Stu. Thanks for hosting. I want to give attention to our fellow content providers in the Filsinger Games universe. Of course, Sam, Mike, and Todd over at Roll Up, the official podcast of Filsinger Games. Grant Pachoco and the Filsinger Games fan podcast. Steve Tower at After Further Review. Dave Little and Heartland Championship Wrestling. Lee Longbree and the Dizzy Dice podcast. Brock Atkinson at Rockster Builds, as well as Brock and Mike's Filsinger Games character spotlight. I also want to give kind of a personal shout out to one of my students. I just found out a couple hours ago, a freshman, well, going to be a sophomore now, is a state champion for our school in boys golf. So congratulations to Sam is his name. And congratulations, as I said, just completed his freshman year. So he's got many more years ahead. He's been playing golf for years. He does national tournaments outside of the high school league as well. So nice young man and did a great job representing our school. His dad also owns a great restaurant in West St. Paul on Robert Street called The Fireside. So if you're in the West St. Paul area, stop on by The Fireside for some great grub and some great drinks.
I will be sure to do that. Thank you, Corey, for that endorsement. Chad, how about you, sir?
Well, to piggyback on that, you know, this whole golf thing, the Gilbert High School boys team won the state championship a couple weeks ago. And then my alma mater, the Lake Mills High School golf team, won the state championship. So two different classes. So, but very, very unique that they two high schools I have ties with in Iowa won in their respective division. So good for them. I want to give a shout out to everybody who took time to comment on episode number 85, Thomas, TK, Matt, The Faction, Tournament Master, Kevin, The Butcher, Pariah, Death Knight 2, Pete Beck. And since I wasn't on, I'm going to give myself a shout out for commentating on that shit show. Very good. Good job, guys. I was at a conference in Wisconsin, having a good time and learning lots. So thank you all.
Thank you, Chad. Mr. Dalton.
Are you having problems with flooding? Oh, no, wait, I did that already. Never mind.
You're reading the wrong copy.
Yes, I'm reading the copy from earlier in the show. I'm sorry. No, I just would like to, again, plug, since we're on the golf kick here, Destroyer Park Golf in Akron, New York. They are redoing the clubhouse now a lot with different photos and things of the Destroyer and different historical periods of wrestling with that he was a part of. And they were there tonight putting all the photos and frames and stuff, and I got sidetracked talking to Kurt Beyer about, you know, a bunch of different wrestling things. It's just so cool to see, and they've got so many great things. You know, if you are in the area or can get here without much pain and suffering, I would say, you know, it's definitely worth a look if you're a wrestling fan at all, and try and get out there. You can, their website, I believe, is destroyerparkgolf.com. They're on the Book of the Face, so you can look at that too. But it's just a great time, and it's a lot of fun. other than that, I just like to thank everybody for listening. Again, you know, we get together every week and just kind of, you know, shoot the breeze about things. And it's nice with this one, it kind of coincided with our last episode with Mark and Matt. So sometimes this stuff just kind of works out. You know, it's not that well planned, I'll tell you that, but sometimes it does work out. So, but thanks everybody for listening, and we'll be back again next week.
Thank you, Tim. And, you know, it has occurred to me often in my life that all things in life get back to wrestling. And as we've been talking about golf, well, wouldn't you know, professional golf has gotten back to wrestling. If you want to see the epitome of the heel turn in professional golf as it relates to pro wrestling, Phil Mickelson is that man. This is the most beloved member on the PGA Tour, and he has joined the evil empire of a Saudi-backed professional golf tour and is the face of that tour. And it's just unbelievable. The fans are just all up in arms on this. It is a turn executed with such precision, professional wrestling promoters would be envious to have this kind of thing happen, except it's real life. So it has been very interesting to watch the U.S. Open, which is getting ready to tee off tomorrow, one of golf's four majors. And it's just been fascinating to watch all this, because I do believe that life imitates wrestling and life is pro wrestling in a lot of ways. And this is certainly one of them. There are other golfers that have joined this tour and have jumped ship from the PGA Tour as well. But Phil Mickelson is certainly the big name, and it's just fascinating to see. With that, we had a blast doing this, as always. Thanks to my co-host. Great to be with you guys once again. I hope everyone is going to have a great week ahead. We will certainly be back next week. And good night, Denmark. We'll see you next week, promoters.
Hey, promoters, it's Corey again, and we would love to hear from you. Please send us your questions, topic suggestions, or any other comments, and we might include your audio in a future episode of Uncharted Territory. There's two ways you can do it. You can go to tinyurl.com/UNCTER. Again, tinyurl.com/UNCTER. You can click the message button and record up to a 1-minute message, and we can include that in a future episode. Or you can email us either audio or a written question at our email address, utpodcast2020@gmail.com. Again, utpodcast2020@gmail.com.
Want to show your friends that you listen to Uncharted Territory? Well, head on over to our store at tkostore.com/collection/uncharted-territory. You can choose from a shirt or hoodie with Travis Heckel's great podcast cover artwork, or a shirt with a design inspired by one of our favorite bands. While there, check out the other great merchandise at TKO, including shirts of several of the top MMA fighters, including Bigfoot Silva, Tim Sylvia, Ensign Inouye, and more. Need a shirt made for your event or organization? Contact TKO, run by Filsinger Games promoter Justin Bulka, aka Pike Mojo, to place your order. Again, that's tkostore.com, TEEKOstore.com.
The 2022 George Tragos Luthez Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame Induction Weekend takes place July 22nd through the 24th in Waterloo, Iowa. Come see many of the legends of wrestling and the future stars of the sport. This year's Hall of Fame inductees include former WWF Tag Team Champion and NWA TV Champion Mike Rotunda and 7-time WWE Women's Champion Trish Stratus. Other honorees include legendary wrestling announcer Good Old JR Jim Ross, as well as Dangerous Danny Spivey. In addition to honoring these wrestling legends, a great card of wrestling action will be presented on Friday night at the 5 Sullivan Brothers Center by Impact Pro Wrestling. See stars in action such as Too Cold Scorpio, Colt Cabana, Wes Briscoe, the current ROH Heavyweight Champion Jonathan Gresham, Jeremy Wyatt, and the stars of IPW such as James Jeffries, Bryce Jordan, Justin Deason, AJ Smooth, and more. Meet legends such as J.J. Dillon, Jerry Briscoe, Rock Riddle, Thunderbolt Patterson, Baron Von Raschke, Joe Malenko, JBL, John Nord, and referee James Beard. Also meet legendary wrestling coach and American wrestler Dan Gable. Get autographs from these stars in one of the most fan-friendly wrestling fan fests around. There will be several podcast interviews throughout the weekend, plus plenty of Filsinger Games action, as the third TNT Hall of Fame set will be released, as well as the first IPW set. Filsinger Games tournaments will take place on Friday afternoon as well. For all access passes, call 319-233-0745 or visit the link in the podcast notes. That's 319-233-0745. The George Tragos Luthes Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame Induction Weekend, July 22nd through the 24th in Waterloo, Iowa.
I'll see you in Waterloo.
Do you know what a happy chef is, Stuart?
I want to say yes, but
it was like a restaurant chain in the Midwest, and there's only one left, and it's the original one in Mankato, Minnesota. Corey told me, and I never knew it was from Mankato. But they used to have this creepy statue outside, and it would talk to you.
Uh huh.
And so I found a picture of it, and Corey was marveling about it before you got on, so I made him my profile picture.
I thought you said his word. Corey might have puked, but.
I don't think so. I did go there in college, but I don't recall being in there. I know Perkins in Mankato one night I was very drunk and
oh,
that was a different story.
That was another story. Well, let me break for a second. Do we actually have Mike Rotunda?
Yeah, you can put him on there. All right. We got the stats all science. Blah, blah, fuck that. Hello?
Male prostitute.
Hello, I just got home. Let me just run my head under some water to get the 12 layers of sweat off, and then I'll be on.
Okay, sounds good.
All righty, see you in a few.
Yep, bye.
Bye.
Easter egg!
That's just kidding. That has to be an Easter egg.
That is an Easter
egg. We're putting that bitch in.